Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Wednesday. You know, Wednesday, the Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Weather's getting nice in Los Angeles, I've got to be honest with you. We're almost getting smug here. It's just turning into the year. Our teams are all winning. The weather's perfect. It's nice. By the way, tip of the cap to L.A. County. Vaccine numbers are incredible.
We're doing much better, yes.
Much better. L.A. County now doing much better. Tip of the cap to everybody here surrounding us. UCLA had a great year. I don't want to get smug here.
It's important to stay humble.
Stay humble. Got rid of my mustache. I feel better about myself. That's the voice of Joy Taylor, of course. I want to talk about fear for a second. All of us, everybody should go see a therapist. I'm not talking every day. I'm not talking every month. I'm not talking every year. But if you have troubles, go to a therapist. Go to somebody professionally that can listen to you. You can ramble on, pity yourself, be a victim, whatever it is. We're all at some level. And the only people who deny this are the ones that deal with more of it. We're all dealing with the fear of rejection, fear of failure. There's a new term called FOMO, fear of missing out. Young kids don't want to miss out. So they go hang out, even though it's not time efficient. Then they don't have time to study. Fear of missing out, fear of rejection. Jerry Jones is different. He has a fear of being boring and irrelevant. And he fears boring more than being 7-9 or 8-8. Story out today, Jerry Jones has fallen in love with an amazing tight end, Kyle Pitts from Florida. By the way, that makes two of us. Also, if you're GM in the NFL and you're not in love with Kyle Pitts, then go work at Kinko's because he's unbelievable. That said, let's say the Cowboys do move up and get Kyle Pitts. I actually get it from Jerry Jones' perspective. First of all, Dak's numbers and productivity are going to go up, right? Jerry Jones got a lot of heat. He acknowledged it, paying Dak $40 million a year. It would, to some degree, validate Dak's contract. Hey, I paid him $40 million a year. He's a Pro Bowler. And if Dallas doesn't win the Super Bowl because they don't draft defense, well, we're not going to blame Jerry. That's not what we do in America. We'll blame Dak and Mike McCarthy. From Jerry's perspective, I draft Kyle Pitts. It validates Dak's contract. We score more points. We get talked about. More highlights. More merchandise. I get more free press. Kyle Pitts is going to get, in Dallas's offense, get 75, 80 catches, a half dozen touchdowns. Not going to take him away. They have too many good wide receivers. You can't double him. From Jerry's perspective, and I don't get blamed if we don't win the Super Bowl. I mean, look at last year. Cowboy fans fell in love with Dallas drafting CeeDee Lamb. It was the only thing they didn't need in the draft was a wide receiver. And they drafted one. And he's a good player. And at the end of the year, when the Cowboys were average, nobody blamed Jerry. Nobody blamed Jerry, even though that was Jerry's pick. Jerry was smiling, laughing on his yacht. Nobody blamed Jerry. They blamed Mike McCarthy and Andy Dalton and Mike Nolan and global warming and the tax rates. Nobody blamed Jerry Jones. So from Jerry's perspective, I totally get it. It would be doubling down on what the Cowboys already are. Flashy, fun, and interesting. It would not solve their personnel issues. But the reality is, Jerry, we all have a fear of something. Jerry fears being irrelevant. Most of these owners fear being irrelevant. But for Jerry, a marketing guy, a wildcatter, you know, he's always been an aggressive guy, kind of a maverick. He pushes back. He wanted to build the world's biggest stadium. He just doesn't want to be irrelevant. And you draft an edge rusher. You move down in the draft. What Dallas should really do is move down in the draft. That's what they should do. They've got like number 10, get down to about 16, 17, 18, get more picks. There's plenty of good corners, mid to late first round, second round, third round. There's edge rushers all over this draft from pick 14 on, pick 15, pick 16 on. That's what Dallas should do. But Jerry does not like to move back at the top of the first round. He likes to be talked about, and I would not be shocked. Chris Mortensen reported this. I know Chris. You know Chris. Chris knows football. I would not be shocked if Dallas moved up to get Kyle Pitts. And it, don't kid yourself. It would validate that $40 million for Dak, because Dak's numbers would absolutely pop. I want to talk about Aaron Rodgers. I often do, Green Bay Packers quarterback. Aaron Rodgers wants to be the new host of Jeopardy. He has acknowledged it. He said it yesterday on the Pat McAfee show. He said, yes, I want to be the host. He came out and said, listen, I have 187 work days a year in Green Bay. I only would need 46 days to work for Jeopardy. I would like to do it. And, you know, it'd be easy to say, he's not as committed as Tom Brady or Russell Wilson. But I want you to think about this. If you are frustrated with anything in your life, relationship, wife, husband, work, kids, anything, parents, anything, you have two options. This is all you can do. You can keep denying reality, or you can create a new reality. So Aaron Rodgers, and you all know this, you follow football, we all know it here, is frustrated with Green Bay. They draft Jordan Love instead of getting defensive help. They won't get him a number two wide receiver on the free agent market. They couldn't retain Corey Linsley, the Pro Bowl center. They couldn't keep Jared Cook years ago. They got rid of his quarterback coach. Remember, Van Pelt didn't tell him. They couldn't get J.J. Watt. We know he's frustrated. That's not an argument. So he can deny the reality of Green Bay, or he can create a new reality. And I think Aaron Rodgers is creating a new reality. And I think it's mentally very healthy. He's saying, Green Bay, you're mostly committed to me. And now, I'm mostly committed to you. Green Bay is saying, we love you, Aaron, but we see the future. And Aaron's saying, I love you, Green Bay, but I see the future too. I think it's very healthy. Look at it from Aaron Rodgers' perspective. Tom Brady has an all-star team around him. Drew Brees, last 3 years, had an all-star team around him. Patrick Mahomes has an all-star team around him. How the hell can they afford Joe Tooney? Jared Goff had an all-star team around him. Russell Wilson, Jimmy Garoppolo. And Aaron Rodgers is like, I'm the MVP. I'm 37. And they can't retain the best center in football? What? It was a fifth-round pick. You didn't pay him anything for 4 years. So you can just put your head down, deny the reality of what Green Bay does with Aaron Rodgers, or you can create a new reality. And I think it's very healthy, and I think that's, I mean, you can keep doing it over and over. Like, if you married somebody, if you married some guy and he still goes on Vegas weekends with his boys and he still goes on golf weekends and disappears and leaves you with the kids, you can deny that's who he is, or you can go have some fun too with the girls in Vegas, or you're going to resent him. There's only two options when dealing with frustration. Deny it, it's not happening, or create a new reality. And Aaron's saying, yeah, Green Bay's mostly committed to me. Mostly, but not like Tampa is to Tom, or the Saints are to Breeze, or Kansas City is Mahomes, or it appears Buffalo is with Josh Allen. I mean, they're committed mostly. So Aaron's saying, I'm committed mostly. I mean, the Packers draft Jordan Love. We love you, but we're looking to the future. And Aaron does a game show and says, I love you, but I want to do this for about 60 days a year. I think it's totally healthy. Good for Aaron Rodgers. I mean, think about Aaron Rodgers. He just wins the MVP. He wins the MVP. You think they would be doubling down on him. Instead, they couldn't keep their center or get J.J. Watt or pay for a second receiver. And in his world, he's like, time out here. Have you seen what Tom has and what Breeze had and what Mahomes has? And the Bills just got Josh Allen another wide receiver? First it was Cole Beasley, then Stephon Diggs, then Emmanuel Sanders. Rebuilt the offensive line. Are we dealing with another bank here? Are they doing overseas stuff? So I actually, when Aaron does this, I don't know if he'd get the Jeopardy job or not. Listen, Michael Strahan got the Regis job, and he wasn't a star quarterback. He's just a funny, popular defensive lineman. I have no problem with Aaron Rodgers getting the Jeopardy job. I think I'd probably get him. He'd get talked about more than Ken Jennings. But listen, man, if you're frustrated in any part of your life, you can put your head down and deny it or create a new reality. Good for Aaron. You know, I am so – at some point, Aaron Rodgers is going to have to admit that I'm his ally. That's like the 38th nice thing I've said about Aaron.
You've turned a corner on Aaron Rodgers, though.
Well, no. When I feel like – I always say I want to put myself in the shoes of the athlete.
Right.
I would be frustrated as blank if I was Aaron Rodgers. And I was looking at – I mean, listen, here at Fox, you and I – now, I am pissed because we no longer have free food. But – our staff is bigger than every other staff at rival networks.
Yes.
Our people are unbelievable. Because we're in Los Angeles, we have union workers around us who are way better than average, way better than the average worker. So we have a great support system here. I mean, they spend money on us. Our set, the average simulcast set is a broom closet. But if you and I were working out of a crappy set and had lousy people, and our contemporaries, the people around us, had our set and our budget and our staff, after a while you start resenting it. And I look at Aaron and I think, okay, the only thing that's going to keep me away from resenting Green Bay is creating a new reality, which is I'm about 85% into you, just like you're about 80-85% into me.
Yeah, I mean, that's how commitment works.
That's right.
And I don't think that this makes Aaron Rodgers any less committed to football.
No. But it's a mental health issue at some point.
No, I agree.
I'm going to drive myself freaking crazy.
He should do what makes him happy.
Yeah, like be 85% committed, and then 15% of your life, go marry that beautiful actress and go do Jeopardy and have a life. Because, by the way, they got rid of your quarterback coach and would not give you a phone call. They could not re-sign Jared Cook. They could not retain a Pro Bowl center. Have you seen the all-star team Tom Brady's got down there? It's like it. It's like the Globetrotters. They got the dribbler, the half-court shot guy, the behind-the-back guy, the dunk guy. It's like it's an all-star team. It's ridiculous. And everybody else is becoming the Washington Generals. I'm saving this. And by the way, we've seen what Green Bay is when Aaron doesn't play. Terrible. Okay. I mean, Tampa wasn't terrible when Tom wasn't there. Tom took them to another level, but they got players.
Yeah, I'm with you. The idea that they are looking towards the future when you have the NFL MVP currently playing for you at the quarterback position is really silly. It's silly.
I almost felt like I helped America with the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was very insightful.
Yeah, I got you through a lot of stuff, America. Yeah. And for that, you get nothing but watch me eat a sandwich in an hour and a half. So, really interesting what's happening in Atlanta. So Atlanta's got a lot of power now in the draft. Atlanta's got the number 4 pick, and they don't really need a quarterback. They don't. The GM wants one. The coach doesn't. The new coach doesn't. This is what's happening in San Francisco, where John Lynch wants one quarterback, and then Kyle Shanahan wants another quarterback. But in Atlanta, it's worse. The GM wants a quarterback, and the coach is like, no, I like Matt Ryan. So Atlanta's got a lot of power. It's a bad quarterback draft next year. It's a great quarterback draft this year. And if you don't get that number 4 quarterback, if you're Denver or if you're the Bears or Washington, you may go 2 years and have to settle for Ryan Fitzpatrick and Andy Dalton. That's the reality of it. But it's really interesting how much optics and style matter. We've always thought of the NBA as sort of the style league. You know, it's kind of the cool league. It's happening in the NFL too. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I think Atlanta potentially could make a huge mistake here. That's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hustler Turf Equipment, most complete lineup of residential and commercial zero-turn lawnmowers in the industry. Hustler Turf dealers are near you, 1,000 in the country. HustlerTurf.com, HustlerTurf.com. Nick Wright, 10 minutes. So it's very interesting. The Atlanta Falcons general manager wants to draft a quarterback, according to Chris Mortensen. The new coach, Arthur Smith, says, no. Matt Ryan's fine. He's 35. He's got a lot of good years left. I agree with the coach, not the GM. So anytime in the moment, like my wife and I, she's struggling with something. I always say, this is my rule. If I would have given you what's happening today 10 years ago, go back a decade, and I said, this is our reality today, would you take it? And my wife, we got 6 kids, 2 are mine, 4 hers, mixed family, right? And sometimes she'd be like, oh, the day-to-day vagaries of having kids, right? The struggles and the hardships. And I always say to her, okay, if I'd have told you 10 years ago, my son is this just joyful, loving tech whiz. We got one in Vermont Prep Academy, one played lacrosse in college, one's a chef, one got an academic scholarship at a university, and one is going to an amazing school out east. Would you have bought that 10 years ago? I know where we were with these kids 10 years ago. I'd have bought that 10 years ago. Don't get caught up in the day-to-day struggles, because raising kids is hard. Like, right, you're going to have bad weeks. You know, the old joke is, the days are long and the years fly by with kids. But the days, let me tell you, folks, they're long. They're long days with kids. They're kids, right? They're learning. They're growing. Their brains don't function completely yet. They're not all developed. And so the guy that wants to get rid of Matt Ryan, let me ask you this. I'm not even going to count Matt Ryan with Kyle Shanahan when he won the MVP. I'm not going to count that. I'm not going to count that. For my argument, I should, I won't. Because nobody gets the number one offensive coordinator for most of their career. I'm not going to count it. I'm going to go the last 4 years after Kyle Shanahan. Matt Ryan, 96 passer rating, 66% completion percentage, 286 yards per game, 4th in the NFL, 2.5 times the touchdowns as picks. By the way, that's with 2 coordinators, Dirk Cutter and Sark. That's not ideal. So he's had multiple systems to learn. Matt Ryan's problem is stylistically, he does not look like what we want our quarterbacks to look like now. We have these big, strong-armed mobile quarterbacks, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Mahomes. And if you don't have one of them, you're like, well, I don't like that. And I get it. You know, grass always greener. But the division Matt Ryan plays in, and this league's about winning your division first, has been dominated by pocket quarterbacks. Breeze and Matt Ryan have won the division each of the last 5 years, and now it's owned by Brady, another pocket guy. Atlanta's only done one thing well the last 3 to 4 years, pass. They do nothing else well. They pass. And Matt Ryan, in the last 4 years, has led the NFL in attempts, completions, and passing yards. Now think about that. That goes back to my initial 10-year argument. Do you believe if you're the GM of Atlanta, if you draft Trey Lance, and that's reportedly who he wants, and I think he's talented. I like Trey Lance. But do you believe that Trey Lance, in his entire career for a 4-year period, will lead the NFL in attempts, completions, and passing yards? Even if he's good, that's highly unlikely. Of the 131 quarterbacks drafted since 2010, 11 have been hits. 11. So ask yourself, would you have years ago when Kyle Shanahan left, half decade ago, if I said to you, yeah, Matt's going to lead the league in attempts, completions, and passing yards, and basically be the only positive element to your football team, you want to get rid of that? Derek Carr is the only thing saving the Raiders. Matt Ryan's the only thing saving Atlanta. Go look at the 14 quarterbacks who made the playoffs last year. I would take Matt Ryan over at least half of them. Phillip Rivers, Big Ben, Baker, Alex Smith, Trubisky, Goff, and even Tannehill. Because I think Tannehill, now that Arthur Smith is gone, will go down. Again, if you live in the moment, Matt Ryan stylistically doesn't look like what you kind of think the NFL is becoming. And I get that. I absolutely get that. This team does nothing well, though, except pass. That's all they do well. That is it. And Trey Lance could be terrific. But Atlanta could literally. Sam Darnold got three picks. Two great ones. Do you know what you could get for that fourth pick to move out? You could get multiple first rounders. Outside of one defensive tackle, you don't have anybody on defense anybody's afraid of. Joey Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, as we know, the Jets traded Sam Darnold to the Panthers, confirming that they will draft a quarterback with the second overall pick. Yeah. But following the move, GM Joe Douglas agreed it was fair to say that that's the direction the team is going in, but they might have chosen a different draft strategy if they didn't have as high of a pick.
We feel really good about the draft class as a whole and the quarterback class specifically, that this was an opportunity to hit the reset button financially, so to speak. I think it's safe to say that, you know, if our pick was a little later, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. We'd fully be comfortable moving forward with Sam.
I heard from a source I trust, it was 55-45 in the building. 55 move off Sam, 45 keep him.
So no, I think a lot of people would have been comfortable running it back with Sam, which says a lot about Sam Darnold, because the New York media and fan base is
tough.
Not very patient.
They're tough.
Yeah, when they're ready to move on from you, you can get out of town as quick as possible. They'll buy your ticket for you. So I'm not surprised by that, because I do think a lot of people have seen the potential that Sam has. Yeah. And also, I think everyone is just in agreement that the Adam Gase situation was a disaster and never should have happened in the first place. So they're taking that into consideration, which I think is very balanced. But this, to me, was going to come down to money and the draft situation that they were in. And that's what he said. If they were not drafting as high as they were, then they wouldn't be having this conversation about moving on from Sam Darnold. And I think this ended up working out well for everyone, because while they might have moved forward with Sam Darnold if they were picking later in the draft, I think it's a better situation for him to go to Carolina. I think it's a better situation actually for the Jets, because they have a new head coach. And very often, if you don't have the guy, which we don't know if Sam Darnold is the guy or was going to be the guy in New York or if he's going to be the guy in Carolina. If you're coming in with a new head coach, generally you want to come in with everything new. You want to pick yes. your guy. You want to pick your quarterback.
Listen, it's possible that Zach Wilson and Sam both win. It's right. It doesn't always have to be winner and loser. I think there's two winners.
And I think, it's going to take a few years to see if there is a winner or loser or how this is all going to play out. No, Zach Wilson isn't the answer in New York. I don't think that he's going to come in and win the division and be Justin Herbert. But that doesn't mean that it's a failure either. Like the conversation of whether Zach Wilson is better than Sam Darnold, I don't think is the conversation, because that's not a fair comparison. As he just mentioned, they are going to have to pay very soon. That is a factor in this decision.
Yeah, big factor.
Like if they were picking later in the draft, they'd be working it out. But that was a big factor in them deciding to move on from Sam Darnold. So it looked like Russell Wilson could have been on his way out of Seattle when he publicly expressed some frustrations with the team. Instead, they are trying to patch up the relationship. But former Seahawk Warren Moon believes that a split one day is inevitable.
I think right now it's almost like a marriage that's starting to just have squabbles. And there's all these little squabbles going on right now. And I think because of Russell's contract situation, there's not a whole lot the Seahawks can do as far as moving him somewhere else, even if they wanted to. But I think that the marriage is not going to end very well going down the road. I think this squabble is going to turn into more of a separation and then a divorce at some point.
Yeah, that's why I said, I agree. I don't think he'll end his career in Seattle. And by the way,
most greats don't end their career where they play.
If he plays 10 to 11 years in Seattle, 8 somewhere else, this is what happens.
Yeah, I think we've all, for the most part, moved on from that romantic state that you're supposed to play your entire career with one team. Now, generally, quarterbacks do more often than other positions, because you do continue to get contract extensions and there is a bit of nostalgia attached to the quarterback position. Again, this is a situation similar to Aaron Rodgers, where I don't get what the squabbling is from the team's perspective. Like, listen, you're paying him. Well, he's in his prime. This is what everyone in the NFL is looking for.
But, you know, this is where the NFL, I think over the last few years, is becoming a little more NBA-ish.
Yes.
Good or bad. Is that the NBA was always about, you create dynasties, but they don't last forever. In the end, egos get in the way. In the NFL, dynasties last as long as the health is good, but it's a physical, violent sport and people get hurt. But what you're finding now is quarterbacks in the NFL, if you take LeBron out, just take LeBron out, quarterbacks now in America are American sports royalty.
Yes.
Russell, Aaron, Brady are bigger than NBA guys, except LeBron. So take LeBron, your Michael Jordan, your Magics, but now NFL guy. And what happens? Egos. They're getting very expensive. That creates tension in the building because Pete's like, I can't get this because I pay my quarterback 38. We're seeing it in Green Bay. That's why Brady tends to work for these coaches, because he doesn't take any money, right?
Right.
So I think what's happening is you're seeing the quarterbacks in the NFL, they're becoming like LeBron-level stars, whereas, and when you do become that, and I'm not blaming anybody, you do have a sense of, I want what I want.
No, and I get the ego part of it. I mean, I don't understand the ego part of it, as we talk about all the time, but I get that that plays a factor from the coaching perspective too. Like, NFL coaches still have a lot of power, you know, that's, they have a lot of say in how these things play out. But what I don't get is how you wouldn't bend over backwards and then do another backflip and then roll over sideways to try and keep your franchise quarterback happy and do everything that you can to win in the moment when they're in their prime. Like what's going on in Green Bay is insanity to me. How is Aaron Rodgers constructing the sentence timeline? Who decided this? What are you talking about, a timeline on Aaron Rodgers? He just won the NFL MVP. The time is right now.
Right.
Scratch the timeline plan. That's garbage. Don't worry about that for another 5 years. And it's similar to Russell Wilson. Like, I get that you're going to go through issues and, as Warren said, squabbles. But you got to work through that.
You're never going to find another Russell. That's
no.
It. This is the best quarterback Seattle will ever have.
This is it.
This is it.
This is your superstar.
You're not going to go far of Aaron Rodgers to like a Trevor Lawrence. Aaron's the best quarterback Green Bay is going to have for 30 years.
It doesn't
work that way. Occasionally, you get a Favre to an Aaron, a Manning to a Luck. But mostly what you get is Elway to Jake Plummer.
That's like coming
good.
To Hollywood and walking down the street and expecting a talent agency to discover you and make you into Marilyn Monroe. What's more likely going to happen is you're going to go to a million auditions, get told 1,000 times, and take you 10 years to get your big break, and then maybe you'll become a superstar. Like, why do you count on the outlier? It feels like that's what the Packers and the Seahawks are doing. So Kevin Durant is making his return tonight. Very exciting after missing 23 games to a hamstring injury. He's listed as available for the Nets game against the Pelicans. However, they will be without James Harden. He will miss at least 10 days after re-aggravating his hamstring strain on Monday night.
Call me cynical. I want to talk about that later.
Okay.
Very
I think this actually worked out well for
funny.
The
Perfect.
Nets that
Perfect.
Harden is... Oh, okay. So you're just looking...
Okay. Isn't it fascinating?
I see where you're going there.
My hamstring suddenly hurts as... Kevin's
as KD is back.
Back and now
well,
I can
look,
rest.
That would be that'd be an interesting strategy for them. We are seeing a lot of injuries this year because it is a more condensed season and there was a very short offseason.
Right.
KD coming back, he was averaging 29 points, 7 rebounds and 5 assists before he was injured in February.
Yeah.
And they went 19-4 in the 23 games without KD.
Yeah.
Which is not remarkable when you look at their roster, but
I have a little bit of a conspiracy theory.
I won't spoil the theory.
Top of
I'm
the
excited
hour.
To see KD tonight, though.
And I'm excited to see Nick Wright. Just a second, Joy, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Okay, so I want to take a break and come back. Nick Wright's got some thoughts. Aaron Rodgers and Nick are that he's always been an Aaron guy. I have too, but I'm viewed as a hater. But Nick and I now have kind of the same. It took us a while to get to the same place, but we're both on Aaron's side now. And Nick will join us and has some thoughts on the Jeopardy stuff and what it means.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches? Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is. year-round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's not waste any time. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Bring on my buddy, co-host, first things first, Nick Wright, now joining us live. All right, so the Aaron Rodgers situation's interesting. I said, listen, if your employer's only about 80% committed to you, then don't bang your head against the wall. Be 80% committed to them. Go do Jeopardy. I got no problems with it. Your take on the whole Jeopardy thing with Aaron, Nick?
Yeah, I think that there is actually a little more than meets the eye here in that Rodgers has been unsuccessful in one thing, and that is leveraging the Packers to do what he wants. You remember a few years ago, he couldn't even keep the quarterback's coach he wanted in Alex Van Pelt. Like, who are you worried about the quarterback's coach coaching other than Rodgers? He wanted him kept. They didn't do it. Obviously, last year, they went right at him in the draft and not only drafting a quarterback, but trading up to draft a quarterback. And this offseason, he was like, hey, I want to make sure we hope to bring back these few guys. One of them was his center, Corey Linsley, and his center, Corey Linsley, is no longer his center. He plays for someone else now. So I just wonder if Rodgers not only wants to host Jeopardy, but wants to use Jeopardy as a potential leverage point with the Packers. Because at last check, that job can pay upwards of $10 million a year. And that's not as much as he makes playing quarterback for the Packers, but it's a hell of a lot easier. It's less travel. It's less days working. No one hits you. And I'm not saying that he is threatening to walk away from football to go host Jeopardy, but it wouldn't shock me if he wants the Packers to be a little concerned with that when they're making a decision like, well, what do we do with the draft? Do we call up Cleveland and try to trade for Odell Beckham, as I've been encouraging them to do? What do we do with Jordan Love? Do we trade Jordan Love to try to get another draft pick to make up for that mistake? All of these things are things I think we know Aaron would like them to do, and he's been unable thus far to pressure them into doing it. I just wonder if Jeopardy could be a cudgel in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, listen, John Wooden and Joe Paterno never really made big money coaching their respective schools, and they're legends. Why? Because they never threatened to leave. The bottom line is John Calipari is ready to leave at a moment's notice. John Calipari.
That's right.
Leverage matters. Even if your employers, you got to make them a little uncomfortable, and Aaron, to this point, hasn't.
A little nervous.
Yeah, listen, I don't love Matt Ryan, but I will say this. Stylistically, he doesn't look like the league going forward. But if you just look at data, all Atlanta does well last 4 years is the Matt Ryan throw the ball down the field thing. They're awful at everything else. Yeah. Could I make an argument? What hurts him is stylistically, he doesn't look like the league. It's not the truth, which is he's the only reason they're not 2-14 the last 3-4 years.
I think that's fair. I also understand if Atlanta fans say, all right, whether we get Kyle Pitts or the number one defensive player or Ja'Marr Chase, whatever it is, you know, this era has run its course. I understand why they might want to turn the page. But, Colin, if we can stay on this for a moment, I want to ask you a question because this is the thing about this year's draft that I don't think enough people are discussing. We know quarterbacks are going 1, 2, 3. There is some speculation about who it's going to be, but we know that it's going to be that position taken 1, 2, 3. So that's only happened twice before, the McNabb couch draft and the Archie Manning Pastorini draft in the modern era. We've never had quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4, and we've never had 4 or 5 star quarterbacks taken in the first round of a draft.
Right.
And so if I'm Atlanta, I'm sitting there thinking, what are the odds 4 franchise quarterbacks come out of this draft? Historically speaking, they're about 0%. Now, could they be banking on one of the teams in front of them making a mistake? I suppose, but I wouldn't want to use the 4th overall pick on the 4th overall quarterback when you know quarterbacks are going 1, 2, 3 already. It just feels like this year we have to acknowledge the history of first-round quarterbacks are about a 40% hit rate, which if 5 of them go this year means 3 of those 5 teams are going to end up disappointed, I would imagine.
Yeah, no, I listen, I've said this before. Atlanta is one of those teams that outside of one defensive lineman, they need like 8 players almost all on defense, and it's a lousy quarterback draft in college next year. So this fourth pick could be the last time in 2 years a desperate team that needs a quarterback could get one. That pick. I think it's an unbelievably attractive pick for a Chicago, a Washington, a Denver. Okay, the Mac Jones pick, and again, I'm not anti-pocket guy, but what I think about Mac Jones is, if you've never trailed in the second half of a college game you've started, that is not reality. And these Alabama quarterbacks live a world of comfort, the opposite of what NFL quarterback is, unless you're Brady or Mahomes. Your takeaway on Mac Jones 3, I think it's a smokescreen. I don't think they're taking him.
You and I think, are the last people alive who think it's a smokescreen. And I just think it's a smokescreen because I think Lynch and Shanahan are smarter than this. And it's going to sound like I'm killing Mac Jones. I'm not meaning to. But Colin, you don't talk about it a ton on the show, but at least at one point in your life, I think your favorite sport was college football.
Yeah.
And I know you watch a ton of it every Saturday.
Yep.
At any point in your entire, the last 2 years, or the last year, watching Alabama, watching college football, did it ever occur to you, that Mac Jones kid, that's a top three pick of the draft? It seemed like nobody thought this. Before this season, there was speculation over whether or not the five-star freshman was going to take his job. During this season, there was speculation that he could come back to school. And now I'm supposed to believe he's better than Justin Fields. Now I'm supposed to believe San Francisco thinks he is worth three first-round picks. Now, the people that are reporting on this, Colin, seem to be in lockstep. Lawrence, Wilson, Mac Jones is the 1-2-3. It just is almost incomprehensible to me that that is what San Francisco wants to do. That they are tired of a guy with a defined ceiling, somewhat physically limited in Jimmy Garoppolo. And so now they're going to move on to a guy who's physically limited with a somewhat defined ceiling in Mac Jones. It is shocking to me that this seems to be where it's going, but it will be one hell of a smokescreen, Colin, because they seem to have everyone but you and me convinced that that pick is as good as in.
Well, I have to ask an NBA question. We got 3 minutes left. I see Zion Williamson on my sheet here, and I love Zion. Got hurt, came back very good. What are your what's rumbling around upstairs with you and Zion Williamson?
Well, so let me take a step back on it, because and it'll set the context for tonight. I think you could argue that if you were to say, give me the most dominant season in NBA history. So not best player, but the player who had the most dominant, unstoppable season. You would have Wilt's 50-point-per-game season, obviously. Jordan in 92, some would argue. LeBron in 2013, some would argue. My argument for the most dominant season ever might be Shaquille O'Neal in 2001. He put it all together. That team was unstoppable. They came a game away from sweeping through the playoffs. Why am I talking about Shaq? Well, tonight, Zion is going to break a 2001 Shaquille O'Neal record. 25 straight games of at least 20 points on 50% shooting. He'll break that record tonight against the Nets, because if the Nets aren't going to do something, it's not going to be stop Zion Williamson from scoring at a high efficiency level. And I think we have become already numb to what he's doing. He hasn't played 100 NBA games. He's in year two. He's 2 years out of high school. And what he's doing on a bad team that guys know they just have to stop him is every single night giving you 20 plus on super high efficiency, to the level of which we've only seen one time ever, and it was Shaq's most dominant season ever, maybe the most dominant season anyone's ever had. So he's on national TV tonight. They'll probably lose. They'll probably lose by a lot, but nobody can stop him.
Yep.
And I just think it's almost already become mundane what he's doing. He hadn't had a bad game in 2 months.
Yeah.
And that's just not supposed to happen.
And he's also such a joyful kid and a joyful player that I've said this. I think he is the face of the league outside of LeBron. I don't think he's the second best player, but he's relatable and
that's
joyful.
Right.
I think, you know, a lot of these NBA stars, the kind of different cats, Zion feels like a guy you'd walk into a local YMCA, he'd be playing,
that's
and
right.
he'd be like, get out of here, let's play a game. I want to play. Your shoe's broken.
He's not jaded.
Nope.
He's not jaded. He's not cynical. He seems to be enjoying himself. And last night he had a humble 34 on 67% and nobody cares. He's unbelievable.
Nick Wright, good talking to you, bud.
See ya.
Yeah, there is something to be said. Most NBA superstars are not relatable. Zion feels like it. He's just a kid who loves the game. Loves the game. Joyful. All right, hour two. I've got my conspiracy theory next.